An Inspector Calls by J.B. Priestley. Adapted for radio by John Foley. With John Woodbine and Maggie Steed as Arthur and Sybil Burling, and Bob Peck as Inspector Gould.
All right, Edna. Give Mr. Croft the port, will you?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, you like this port, Gerald. It's exactly the same as your father gave.
Well, then it'll be all right. The governor prides himself on being a good judge of port.
Oh, I'm sure he is. Now then, Sybil, you'll take a glass tonight. Special occasion.
Yes, go on, Mummy. You must drink our health.
Very well, just a little.
Allow me.
Thank you, Gerald. All right, Edna, I'll ring from the drawing room when we want coffee.
Yes, ma'am.
Ah, this is very nice. Mm. Good dinner too, Sybil. Don't you think so, Gerald?
No, absolutely first class.
Arthur, you're not supposed to say such things.
Come, Sybil, I'm treating Gerald like one of the family. I'm sure he won't object.
Go on, Gerald, just you object.
I wouldn't dream of it. In fact, I insist on being one of the family now. I've been trying long enough, haven't I?
Except for all last summer when you never came near me.
I was awfully busy at the works all that time.
That's what you said.
Now, Sheila, don't tease him. When you're married, you'll realise that men with important work sometimes need to spend all their time and energy on their business. You'll have to get used to that, just as I had.
I don't believe I will, so you be careful, Gerald.
Oh, I will, I will.
Now then, Eric, what's the joke?
I don't know. I suddenly feel I just had to laugh.
You're squiffy.
I am not. Stop it, you two. Arthur, what about this famous toast of yours?
Oh, yes, of course. Well, Gerald, it's a pity Sir George and Lady Croft can't be with us. Mm. But they're abroad, so it can't be helped. I tell you frankly that your engagement to Sheila means a tremendous lot to me. You're just the kind of son-in-law I always wanted. Your father and I have been friendly rivals in business for some time, and now you've brought us together. Perhaps we may look forward to the time when Crofts Limited and Burling & Company are no longer competing, but working together for lower costs and higher prices.
Now, Arthur, I don't think you ought to talk business on an occasion like this.
Neither do I. All wrong.
I only mentioned it in passing. What I did want to say was that Sheila's a lucky girl. And I think you're a pretty fortunate young man too, Gerald.
I know I am.
So here's wishing the pair of you the very best that life can bring. Gerald and Sheila.
Yes, Gerald, Sheila, darling. Our congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Eric?
Yes, all the best. She's got a temper sometimes, but she's not bad, really. Good old Sheila.
Chump. I can't drink to this, can I? When do I drink?
You can drink to me.
All right, then. I drink to you, Gerald.
Thank you. And I drink to you. I hope I can make you as happy as you deserve to be. And I'll start with this.
Oh, what is it?
As if you didn't know.
Open it.
Oh, Gerald, it's wonderful. Look, Mummy, it's the ring I told you about. Isn't it a beauty? Oh, darling.
Steady, you two.
Now I really feel engaged.
So you ought, darling. It's a lovely ring. Be careful with it.
Careful? I'll never let it out of my sight.
And now, Arthur, I think Sheila and I had better go into the drawing room and leave you men.
No, before you go, I just want to say this. I'm delighted about this engagement. I hope it won't be too long before you're married. It's a very good time for it. And soon, it'll be an even better time. There's a lot of silly pessimistic talk about possible labour trouble in the near future, but, and I speak as a hard-headed businessman who has to take risks and know what he's about, I say you can ignore all this wild talk. We've passed the worst of it. We employers are coming together at last to see that our interests and the interests of capital are properly protected. We're in for a time of steadily increasing prosperity.
I believe you're right, sir.
Now, you three young people, remember what I'm telling you now. In 20 or 30 years' time, you may be giving a little party like this. Your son or daughter might be getting engaged. And I tell you, by then, you'll be living in a world that'll have forgotten all these capital versus labour agitations. There'll be peace and prosperity and rapid progress everywhere.
Now,
I know, my dear, I know I'm talking too much. But you youngsters remember what I said. We hard-headed, practical businessmen must say something sometime. And we don't guess. We've had experience, and we know.
Arthur.
All right, Sybil.
Thank you, dear. Don't keep Gerald in here too long. Eric, I want you a minute.
Yes, Mother.
A cigar?
No, thanks. I can't really enjoy them.
Oh, you don't know what you're missing. Oh, help yourself to port.
Oh, thank you.
By the way,
now we're alone, there's something I'd like to mention in strict confidence. I have an idea your mother feels you might have done better for yourself socially.
I say.
Oh, no, that's all right. Lady Croft comes from an old county family, landed people and so forth. They'd say it's only natural. But what I wanted to say is this. There's a fair chance that I might find my way into the next honours list.
Oh,
just a knighthood, of course.
Oh, I say congratulations.
I've had a hint or two. You see, I was Lord Mayor 2 years ago when royalty visited, and I've always been regarded as a useful party man. So I gather there's a very good chance of a knighthood. So long as we behave ourselves, eh? Don't get into the police court or start a scandal.
Well, if that's the only obstacle, sir, I think you might as well accept my congratulations now.
I couldn't do that, Earl. And don't say anything yet.
Not even to my mother. I know she'd be delighted.
Well, when she comes back, you might drop her a hint. And you can promise her
that we'll try to keep out of trouble during the next few months.
What's the joke? Started telling stories.
No. Want another glass of port?
Oh, yes, please.
All right, then. And give me one.
Mother says we mustn't stay too long. But I don't think it matters. I left them talking about clothes. You think a girl would never have any clothes before she gets married? Women are potty about them.
You've got to remember, my boy, that clothes mean something quite different to a woman. Not just something to wear, not only something to make them look prettier, but, well, a sort of sign or token of their self-respect.
Oh, that's true.
Yes, I remember.
What do you remember?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Sounds a bit fishy to me.
No.
You don't know what some of these boys get up to nowadays, Gerald. Oh. More money to spend and time to spare than when I was Eric's age. Oh, they worked as hard in those days and kept as short of cash. Though even then, we broke out and had a bit of fun sometimes.
I bet you did.
Yeah, but this is the point. What so many of you young fellas don't seem to understand now, when things are so much easier, is that a man has to make his own way, has to look after himself. Oh, and his family too, of course, when he has one. So long as he does that, he won't come to much harm. But the way some of these cranks talking right now, you'd think everybody has to look after everybody else, as if we were all mixed up together like bees in a hive. Yeah. Community. All that nonsense. But take my word for it, and I've learned in the good hard school of experience,
A man has to mind his own business and look after himself and his own. And
somebody at the front door.
Edna will answer it. Have another glass of port, Gerald. Then we'll join the ladies. That'll stop me giving good advice.
Yes, you piled it on a bit tonight, Father.
Ah, special occasion. I'm feeling contented. I wanted you to have the benefit of my experience.
Please, sir, an inspector's called to see you.
An inspector? What kind of inspector?
A police inspector. He says his name's Ghoul.
Ghoul? Oh, I don't know him.
He says it's important, sir.
All right, well, show him in then.
Yes, sir.
I'm still on the bench. It may be something about a warrant.
Oh, sure to be. Unless Eric's been up for something. And that would be awkward, wouldn't it?
Oh, very.
Hugh, what do you mean?
Only something we were talking about when you were out. A joke, really.
Well, I don't think it's very funny.
What's the matter with you?
Nothing.
Inspector Gould.
Mr. Burling.
Yes. All right, Edna.
Yes, sir.
You're new, aren't you, Inspector?
Yes, sir. Recently transferred.
I was an alderman for years, and Lord Mayor 2 years ago, and I'm still on the bench. So I know the Brumley police officers pretty well. I thought I'd never seen you before. Well, what can I do for you?
I'd like some information, if you don't mind. 2 hours ago, a young woman died in the infirmary. She was taken there this afternoon because she'd swallowed a lot of strong disinfectant. Burnt her inside out.
My God.
Yes. She was in great agony. They did everything they could for her at the infirmary, but she died. Suicide, of course.
Horrible business. But I don't understand why you should come here, Inspector.
I've been round to the room she had, and she'd left a letter there. And a sort of diary. Like a lot of these young women who get into trouble, she'd used more than one name. But her real name was Eva Smith.
Eva Smith.
Do you remember her, Mr. Burling?
Well, I seem to remember hearing that name somewhere. But it doesn't convey anything to me.
She was employed in your works at one time.
Oh, that's it, is it? Well, we've several hundred young women there, you know. And they keep changing.
Well, this young woman, Eva Smith, was a bit out of the ordinary. I found this photograph of her in her lodgings. Perhaps you'd remember her from that.
May I see that photograph, too?
Not just at the moment, sir.
Any particular reason? Why not?
There might be.
And the same applies to me, I suppose.
Yes.
Well, I can't imagine what it could be.
Neither can I.
It's the way I like to work. One person and one line of inquiry at a time. Otherwise, there's a muddle. Well, Mr. Burling, do you remember Eva Smith now?
Yes, I do. She was one of my employees, and then I discharged her.
Is that why she committed suicide?
Keep quiet, Eric. Don't get excited. This girl left us nearly 2 years ago. Let me see, it must have been in the early autumn.
End of September, sir.
That's right.
Look here, sir. Wouldn't you rather I was out of this?
I don't mind your being here, Gerald. And I'm sure you've no objection, have you, Inspector? Oh, perhaps I ought to explain first that this is Mr. Gerald Croft. Son of Sir George Croft, you know, Crofts Limited.
Mr. Gerald Croft, eh?
We've been celebrating his engagement to my daughter, Sheila.
Mr. Croft is going to marry Miss Sheila Burling.
That's right.
Then I prefer you to stay.
Oh, very well.
Look, there's nothing mysterious about this business. And that it happened nearly 2 years ago, obviously it has nothing whatever to do with the wretched girl's suicide. Eh, Inspector?
I can't agree with you there, sir.
Why not?
Because what happened to her then may have determined what happened to her afterwards. And what happened to her afterwards may have driven her to suicide. A chain of events.
Oh, well, put like that, there's something in what you say. Still, I can't accept any responsibility. If we were all responsible for everything that happened to everybody we'd had anything to do with, it would be very awkward, wouldn't it?
Very awkward.
By Jove, yes. And as you were saying, Dad, a man has to look after himself.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. Now, Inspector, about this Eva Smith. I remember her quite well now. She was a lively girl, a good worker too. In fact, the foreman in the machine shop where she worked told me he was ready to promote her into what we call a leading operator, head of a small group of girls. But after they came back from their holidays that August, they suddenly decided to ask for more money. They were averaging about 22 and 6, neither more nor less than is paid generally in our industry. But they wanted the rate raised to about 25 shillings a week. I refused, of course.
Why?
Why?
Yes. Why did you refuse?
Inspector, I don't see that it's any concern of yours how I choose to run my business.
It might be.
I don't like your tone. Or all these questions.
It's my duty to ask questions. So, why did you refuse?
If I'd agreed to this demand for a new rate, we'd have added about 12% to our labour costs. Does that satisfy you? We were paying the usual rates, and if they didn't like those rates, they could go and work somewhere else. It's a free country, I told them.
It isn't if you can't go and work somewhere else.
Keep out of this, Eric. You hadn't even started in the works when this happened. So they went on strike. That didn't last long, of course.
No, not if it was just after the holidays. They'd all be broke if I know them.
They mostly were. And so was the strike after a week or two. Ah, pitiful affair. Well, we let them all come back at the old rates. Except the 4 or 5 ringleaders who'd started the trouble. I went down myself and told them to clear out. This girl, Eva Smith, was one of them. So she had to go.
You couldn't have done anything else.
He could. He could have kept her on instead of throwing her out. I call it tough luck.
Rubbish. If you don't come down sharply on some of these people, they'd soon be asking for the earth.
They might. But after all, it's better to ask for the earth than to take it.
What did you say your name was, Inspector?
Ghoul. G-O-O-L-E.
How do you get on with our Chief Constable, Colonel Roberts?
I don't see much of him.
Perhaps I ought to warn you that he's an old friend, and I see him fairly frequently. We play golf together sometimes.
I don't play golf.
I didn't suppose you did.
Well, I think it's a damn shame.
I never wanted to play.
I mean about this girl. I don't see why she should have been sacked just because she'd a bit more spirit than the others. I'd have let her stay.
Unless you brighten your ideas, you'll never be in a position to let anybody stay or tell them to go. It's about time you learned to face responsibilities. That's something this public school and varsity life you've had doesn't seem to teach you.
Well, we don't need to tell the inspector all about that, do we?
I don't see that we need to tell the inspector anything more. In fact, there's nothing I can tell him. I told the girl to clear out. She went. That's the last I heard of her. Huh. What happened to her after that? Go on the streets, did she?
Not exactly.
What's this about streets? Oh, sorry. I didn't know we had a visitor. Mummy sent me to ask why you didn't come along to the drawing room.
We shall be along in a minute now. Just finishing.
I'm afraid not.
There's nothing else, you know.
What's this about?
Nothing to do with you, Sheila. Run along.
Just a minute, Miss Burling.
Look here, Inspector. I consider this uncalled for and officious. I've half a mind to report you. I've told you all I know. And now there isn't the slightest reason why my daughter should be dragged into this business.
What business? What's happening?
I'm a police inspector, Miss Burling. This afternoon, a young woman drank some disinfectant and died in the infirmary after several hours of agony.
Oh, how horrible. Was it an accident?
No. She wanted to end her life. She felt she couldn't go on any longer.
Oh, don't tell me that's because I discharged her from my employment nearly 2 years ago.
That might have started it.
Did you, Dad?
The girl had been causing trouble in the works. I was quite justified.
Yes, I think you were. I know we'd have done the same thing. Don't look like that, Sheila.
Sorry, it's just I can't help thinking about this girl destroying herself so horribly. And I've been so happy tonight. I wish you hadn't told me. What was she like? Quite young.
24.
Pretty?
She wasn't pretty when I saw her today.
Oh. That's enough of that.
I don't really see that this inquiry gets you anywhere, Inspector.
It's what happened to her since she left Mr. Burling's works that is important. And we can't help you there because we don't know.
Are you all sure you don't know?
Are you suggesting now that one of them knows something about this girl?
Yes.
You didn't come here just to see me, then?
No.
Well, of course, if I'd known that earlier, I wouldn't have called you officious and talked about reporting you. You understand that, don't you, Inspector? I thought that you were making the most of this tiny bit of information I could give you. You sure of your facts?
Some of them, yes.
I can't think they could be of any great consequence.
The girl's dead, though.
You talk as if we were responsible.
Just a minute, Sheila. Inspector, you and I had better go and talk this over quietly in a corner.
Why should you? He's finished with you. He says it's one of us now.
Well, I've never known an Eva Smith.
Neither have I.
Was that her name? Eva Smith?
Yes.
Never heard it before.
So, where are you now, Inspector?
Where I was before, Mr. Croft. I told you she'd used more than one name. She was still Eva Smith when Mr. Burling sacked her for wanting 25 shillings a week instead of 22 and 6. But after that, she stopped being Eva Smith. Perhaps she'd had enough of it.
Can't blame her.
Do you know what happened to this girl after she left my works?
Yes. She was out of work for the next 2 months. Both her parents were dead, so that she'd no home to go back to, and she hadn't been able to save much, so after 2 months, with no work, no money coming in, and living in lodgings, with no relatives to help her, few friends, lonely, half-starved, she was feeling desperate.
It's a rotten shame.
Well, there are a lot of young women living that sort of existence in every city and big town in this country, Miss Burling. If there weren't, the factories and warehouses wouldn't know where to look for cheap labour. Ask your father.
But these girls aren't cheap labour. They're people.
I've had that notion myself from time to time. In fact, I thought it would do us all a bit of good if sometimes we tried to put ourselves in the place of these young women, counting their pennies in their dingy little back bedrooms.
I expect it would. But what happened to her then?
She had what seemed to her a wonderful stroke of luck. She was taken on in a shop. Millwood's.
Millwood's? It's a very good shop. We go there. In fact, I was there this afternoon.
There was a good deal of influenza about at the time, and Millwood suddenly found themselves short-handed. She liked working there. It was a nice change from a factory. And she felt she was making a good fresh start. But after a couple of months, just when she felt she was settling down nicely, they told her she'd have to go.
Not doing her work properly.
There was nothing wrong with her work. A customer complained about her, and so she had to go.
When was this?
At the end of January last year.
What did this girl look like?
Well, I have a photograph of her. If you'd care to take a look at it there.
What's the matter with her?
She recognised her, didn't she?
Yes.
Why the devil do you want to go upsetting the child like that?
I didn't do it. She's upsetting herself.
Why?
I don't know. Yet. That's something I have to find out.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll find out first.
Shall I go to her?
No, leave this to me. I must also have a word with my wife, tell her what's happening. We were having a nice little family celebration tonight. And a nasty mess you've made of it.
That's more or less what I was thinking earlier tonight, sir. When I was in the infirmary looking at what was left of Eva Smith. A nice little promising life there, I thought. And a nasty mess somebody's made of it.
Oh, well. I'd like to have a look at that photograph now, Inspector.
Now, you heard what I said, Mr. Croft. One line of inquiry at a time. Otherwise, we'll all be talking at once, and we won't know where we are. If you've anything to tell me, you'll have an opportunity of doing it soon.
Look here, I've had enough of this.
I dare say.
I'm sorry, but we were having a little party. I've had a few drinks, and I've got a headache. And as I'm only in the way here, I think I'd better turn in.
Oh, if you turn in, you might have to turn out again soon.
Getting a bit heavy-handed, aren't you, Inspector?
Possibly. But if you're easy with me, I'm easy with you.
After all, we're respectable citizens, and not criminals.
Sometimes there isn't as much difference as you think. Often, if it was left to me, I wouldn't know where to draw the line.
Fortunately, it isn't left to you, is it?
No, but some things are. Inquiries of this sort, for instance. Well, Miss Burling?
You knew it was me all the time, didn't you?
I had an idea it might be. From something the girl herself wrote.
I've told my father. He didn't seem to think it amounted to much. But I felt rotten about it at the time, and now I feel a lot worse. Did it make much difference to her?
Well, it was the last real steady job she had. When she lost it, for no reason that she could discover, she decided she might as well try another kind of life.
So I'm really responsible.
Oh, a good deal happened to her after that. But you're partly to blame, just as your father is.
But what did Sheila do?
I went to the manager of Millwoods and I told him that if he didn't get rid of that girl, I'd persuade Mother to close our account with them.
And what had this girl done to you?
When I was looking at myself in the mirror, I saw her smiling at the assistant. I was furious with her. I'd been in a bad temper anyhow.
And was it the girl's fault?
Not really. All right, Gerald, you needn't look at me like that. At least I'm trying to tell the truth. I expect you've done things you're ashamed of, too.
I never said I hadn't.
Never mind. You can settle that between you afterwards. What happened, Miss Burling?
Well, I'd gone in to try something on. It was an idea of my own. Mother had been against it, and so had the assistant, but I insisted.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I tried it on, I knew they'd been right. It just didn't suit me at all. I looked silly. This girl had bought the dress up from the workroom, and when the assistant, Miss Francis, had asked her something about it, this girl, to show us what she meant, held the dress up as if she was wearing it. And it just suited her. She was the right type for it, just as I was the wrong type. She was a very pretty girl, too. And that didn't make it any better. Well, when I tried the thing on and looked at myself and knew that it was all wrong, I caught sight of this girl smiling at Miss Frances as if to say, doesn't she look awful? I was absolutely furious. I went to the manager and told him that this girl had been very impertinent. How could I know what would happen afterwards? If she'd been some miserable, plain little creature, I don't suppose I'd have done it. But she was very pretty and looked as if she could take care of herself. I couldn't feel sorry for her.
In fact, you might be said to have been jealous of her.
I suppose so, yes.
So you used the power you had, as the daughter of a good customer, and also the man well known in the town, to punish the girl.
It didn't seem to be anything very terrible at the time. Don't you understand? And if I'd helped now,
It's too late. She's dead.
It's a bit thick, when you come to think of it.
Oh, shut up, Eric. It's the only time I've ever done anything like that, and I'll never, never do it again. I've noticed them giving me a sort of look sometimes at Millwoods. I noticed it even this afternoon. I suppose some of them remember. Why had this to happen?
That's what I asked myself tonight, when I was looking at that dead girl. And then I said to myself, try to understand why it had to happen. And that's why I'm here. And why I'm not going till I know all that happened. Eva Smith lost her job with Burling & Company because the strike failed, and they were determined not to have another one. At last she found another job in a big shop, and had to leave there because you were annoyed with yourself, and passed the annoyance on to her. Now she had to try something else. Well, first, she changed her name to Daisy Renton.
Daisy Renton?
That's right, sir.
Do you mind if I get myself a drink, please?
No.
Where is your father, Miss Burling?
He went to tell my mother what was happening. Eric, take the inspector to the drawing room. Well, Gerald?
Well, what?
How did you come to know this girl? Eva Smith.
I didn't.
Daisy Renton, then. It's the same thing.
Why should I have known her?
You gave yourself away as soon as he mentioned her other name.
All right. I knew her. Let's leave it at that.
We can't leave it at that.
Listen, darling.
That's no use. You not only knew her, but you knew her very well. Otherwise, you wouldn't look so guilty about it. When did you first get to know her? Was it after she left Millwoods, when she changed her name, as he said, and began to lead a different sort of life? Were you seeing her last spring and summer during that time when you hardly came near me? Said you were so busy. Were you? Oh, yes, of course you were.
I'm sorry, Sheila. But it was all over and done with last summer. I hadn't set eyes on the girl for at least 6 months.
Oh.
I don't come into the suicide business. So for God's sake, don't say anything to the inspector.
You fool, he knows. And I hate to think how much he knows that we don't know yet. You'll see.
Well, Mr. Croft?
What did I tell you?
Inspector, I think Miss Burling ought to be excused any more of this questioning. She's had an exciting day. We were celebrating our engagement, you know. Now she's obviously had about as much as she can stand.
He means I'm getting hysterical.
Well, I've no more questions to ask.
But you haven't finished asking questions, have you?
No.
Then I'm staying.
But why? It's bound to be unpleasant and disturbing.
And you think young women ought to be protected against unpleasant and disturbing things?
If possible, yes.
Well, we know one young woman who wasn't, don't we?
I suppose I asked for that.
Be careful you don't ask for any more, Gerald.
I only meant to say, why stay when you'll hate it?
It can't be any worse for me than it has been. And it might be better.
I see.
What?
You've been put through it, and now you want to see somebody else put through it.
So that's what you think I'm like? I'm glad I realised it in time.
No, I didn't mean...
Yes, you did. And if you'd really loved me, you couldn't have said that. You listened to that story about me. I got that girl sacked from Millwoods, and now you've made up your mind I must obviously be a selfish, vindictive creature.
I neither said that nor even suggested it.
Then why say I want to see somebody else put through it? That's not what I meant at all.
All right, then. I'm sorry.
Yes, but you don't believe me. And this is just the wrong time not to believe me.
I can tell you why Miss Burling wants to stay. A girl died tonight. A pretty, lively sort of girl who never did any harm. But she died in misery and agony, hating life.
I know, and I can't stop thinking about it.
Miss Burling has been made to understand what she did to this girl. She feels responsible. If she leaves now and doesn't hear any more, then she'll feel she's entirely to blame. She'll be alone with her responsibility. The rest of tonight, all tomorrow, all the next night...
Yes, that's it. And I know I'm to blame, and I'm desperately sorry. But I can't believe, I won't believe, it's simply my fault that in the end she committed suicide. That would be too horrible.
You see, we have to share something. If there's nothing else, we have to share our guilt.
Good evening, Inspector.
Good evening, madam.
I'm Mrs. Burling. My husband has just explained why you're here, and while we'll be glad to tell you anything you want to know, I don't think we can help you much.
No, Mother.
Whatever's the matter, Sheila?
You're beginning all wrong, and I'm afraid you'll say something or do something that you'll be sorry for afterwards.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We all started like that. So confident, so pleased with ourselves until he began asking us questions.
You seem to have made a great impression on this child, Inspector.
We often do on the young ones. They're more impressionable.
Go to bed, dear. You'll feel better in the morning.
Nothing could be worse for me, Mother. I'm staying here until I know why that girl killed herself.
Nothing but morbid curiosity.
It isn't.
Please don't contradict me like that. In any case, I don't suppose for a moment that we can understand why the girl committed suicide. Girls of that class...
Mother, don't! For your own sake as well as ours, you mustn't build up...
Mustn't? Really, Sheila?
You mustn't build up a kind of wall between us and that girl. If you do, the inspector will just break it down. And it'll be all the worse when he does.
She's right.
I beg your pardon.
I said she's right.
I consider that a trifle impertinent, Inspector.
Oh, no.
Now, what is it, Sheila?
I don't know. Perhaps it's just because impertinent is such a silly word.
In any case...
Mother, do stop before it's too late.
If you mean that the inspector will take offence...
No, no, I never take offence.
I'm glad to hear it. Though it seems to me that we have more reason for taking offence. I realise, Inspector, that you have to conduct some sort of inquiry, but I must say that so far you seem to be conducting it in a rather peculiar and offensive manner. You know, of course, that my husband was Lord Mayor only 2 years ago, and that he's still a magistrate.
Mrs. Burling, the inspector knows all that, and I don't think it's a very good idea to remind him.
It's crazy. Stop it, please, Mother.
Yes. Now, what about Mr. Burling?
He's coming back in a moment. He's just talking to my son, Eric, who seems to be in an excitable, silly mood.
Really?
I'm afraid he may have had rather too much to drink tonight. We were having a little celebration here.
Isn't he used to drinking?
He's only a boy.
No, he's a young man. And some young men drink far too much.
And Eric's one of them.
Sheila!
I don't want to get poor Eric into trouble, but this isn't the time to pretend that he's not used to drink. He's been drinking too much for the last 2 years.
It isn't true. Gerald, say it isn't true.
Well, Mr. Croft?
Actually, I've never seen much of him outside this house. But, well, I have gathered that he does drink pretty hard.
And this is the time you choose to tell me?
Yes, of course it is. That's what I meant when I talked about building up a wall that's sure to be knocked flat. It makes it all the harder to bear.
But it's you and not the inspector who's doing it.
But don't you see? He hasn't started on you yet.
If necessary, I shall be glad to answer any questions the inspector wishes to ask me. Though naturally, I don't know anything about this girl.
We'll see, Mrs. Burling.
I've been trying to persuade Eric to go to bed, but he says you told him to stay up.
That's right, Mr. Burling.
Why?
Because I shall want to talk to him.
I can't see why. But if you must, then I suggest you do it now. Have him in and get it over, then let the lad go.
I'm sorry, but I can't do that yet.
Now look here, Inspector.
He must wait his turn.
Inspector, I've told you before, I don't like your tone, nor the way you're handling this inquiry. And I don't propose to give you much more rope.
You needn't give me any rope.
No, he's giving us rope so that we'll hang ourselves.
Sybil, what is the matter with that child?
Overexcited. Well, come along, Inspector. What is it you want to know?
At the end of January last year, Eva Smith had to leave Millwoods because Miss Burling compelled them to discharge her. And then she stopped being Eva Smith and looking for a job and became Daisy Renton with other ideas. Mr. Croft, when did you get to know her?
What?
Gerald?
Where did you get the idea that I did know her?
It's no use, Gerald.
You gave yourself away as soon as I mentioned the name Daisy Renton.
Of course he did.
All right. I met her first sometime in March last year in the Stalls Bar of the Palace. I mean the Palace Music Hall here in Bromley.
Well, we didn't think you meant Buckingham Palace.
Sheila, you said your piece. You're obviously going to hate this, so why on earth don't you just leave us to it?
Nothing would induce me. I want to understand exactly what happens when a man says he's so busy at the works that he hardly has time to come and see the girl he's supposed to be in love with.
In the Stalls Bar at the Palace Variety Theatre.
I happened to look in one night, and as the show wasn't very bright, I went to the bar. It's a favourite haunt of women of the town.
Women of the town? I think it would be much better if Sheila didn't listen to this story.
You're forgetting I'm supposed to be engaged to the hero of it. Go on, Gerald. You went into the bar, a favourite haunt of the women of the town.
Oh, I'm glad I amuse you.
Come along, Mr. Croft. What happened?
I didn't propose to stay long. But then I noticed this girl. My God. Sorry, I've suddenly realised, just taking it properly, that she's dead.
Go on, Mr. Croft.
She looked young and fresh and altogether out of place there. And obviously she wasn't enjoying herself. Old Joe Megarty, half-drunk and goggle-eyed, had wedged her into a corner with that obscene fat carcass.
There's no need to be disgusting. And surely you don't mean Alderman Megarty?
Of course I do. He's a notorious womanizer, as well as being one of the worst sots in Bromley.
Well, really, Alderman Meggerty, I must say, we are learning something tonight.
Well, go on, please, Mr. Croft.
The girl saw me looking at her and gave me a glance. It was nothing less than a cry for help. So I went across and told Meggerty that the manager had a message for him or something like that. Got him out of the way. And then told the girl she'd better let me take her out of there.
Where did you go?
To the county hotel, which I knew would be quiet at that time of night. All she wanted was to talk. A little friendliness.
She talked about herself?
Yes. She told me her name was Daisy Renton. That she'd lost both parents. That she came originally from somewhere outside Brumley. She also told me that she'd had a job in one of the works here and had had to leave after a strike. She said something about a shop too, but wouldn't say which it was. And she was deliberately vague about what happened. I couldn't get any exact details about her past life, but what she did let slip, though she didn't mean to, was that she was desperately hard up, and at that moment was actually hungry. I made the people at the county find her some food.
And then you decided to keep her as your mistress.
What?
Of course, Mother. It was obvious from the start.
I discovered she was going to be turned out of the miserable back room she had. A friend of mine had gone off to Canada for 6 months and given me the key to a set of rooms and asked me to keep an eye on them and use them if I wanted. So I insisted on Daisy moving into those rooms and I made her take some money to keep her going there. I want you to understand, Inspector, that I didn't install her there so that I could make love to her. I made her go because I was sorry for her. And I didn't like the idea of her going back to the palace bar. I didn't ask for anything in return.
I see.
Yes, but why are you saying that to him? You ought to be saying it to me.
I suppose I ought, really. I'm sorry, Sheila. Somehow
I know. Somehow he makes you.
But she became your mistress.
I suppose it was inevitable. She was young and pretty and warm-hearted and intensely grateful. I became the most important person in her life.
Were you in love with her?
Oh, I really must protest.
Why should you protest? It was you who turned the girl out in the first place.
I only did what any employer might have done. And what I was going to say was that I protest against the way in which my daughter, a young, unmarried girl, is being dragged
and
into
this
whole...
And it was I who had the girl turned out of her job at Millwood's. And I'm supposed to be engaged to Gerald. I'm not a child, Father. I've a right to know. Well, Gerald, were you in love with her?
It's hard to say. I didn't feel about her as she felt about me.
Of course not. You were the wonderful fairy prince who must have adored it.
All right, I did for a time. Nearly any man would have done.
That's probably about the best thing you've said tonight. At least it's honest. Did you go and see her every night?
No, I wasn't telling you a complete lie when I said I'd been busy at the works. We were very busy. But of course I did see a good deal of her.
I don't think we want any further details of this disgusting affair.
I do.
It wasn't disgusting.
It's disgusting to me.
Yes, but after all, you didn't come into this, did you, Mother?
Inspector, is there anything else you want to know that you ought to know?
Yes. When did this affair end?
I can tell you exactly. In the first week of September. I had to go away for several weeks on business. By that time, Daisy knew it was coming to an end. So I broke it off definitely before I went.
How did you take it?
Better than I'd hoped. She was very gallant about it.
That was nice for you.
No, it wasn't. She told me she'd been happier than ever before, but that she knew it couldn't last, hadn't expected it to last. She didn't blame me at all. I wish to God she had now. Perhaps I'd feel better about it.
She had to move out of those rooms.
Yes. She'd saved a little money during the summer. Didn't want to take any more from me. But I insisted on a parting gift of enough money to see her through to the end of the year.
Did she tell you what she proposed to do?
No. She refused to talk about that. I got the idea that she thought of leaving Brumley.
Did she?
Yes. She went away to be alone, to be quiet, to remember all that had happened between you.
How do you know that?
She kept a rough sort of diary. She felt there'd never be anything as good again for her. And she said she had to go away and remember. Just to make it last longer.
I see. Well, I never saw her again. And that's all I can tell you.
It's all I want to know from you.
In that case, well, I'd like to be alone for a little while. I'd be glad if you let me go.
Go where? Home?
No, I'll just go out, walk about for a while, if you don't mind. I'll come back.
All right, Mr. Croft.
Just in case you don't come back, Gerald, I think you'd better take your ring with you.
I see. Well, I was expecting this.
I don't dislike you as I did half an hour ago, Gerald. In fact, in some odd way, I rather respect you more than I've ever done before. I knew, anyhow, you were lying about those months last year when you hardly came near me. Now at least you've been honest. And I believe what you told us about the way you helped her at first, just out of pity. It was my fault, really, that she was so desperate when you first met her. But this has made a difference. You and I aren't the same people who sat down to dinner here. We'd have to start all over again, getting to know each other.
Now, Sheila, I'm not defending him, but you must understand that a lot of young men...
Don't interfere, please, Father. Gerald knows what I mean.
Yes, I know what you mean. But I'm coming back, if I may.
All right.
Thank you.
You know, Inspector, you never showed him that photograph of her.
It wasn't necessary.
You have a photograph of this girl?
Yes. I think you'd better take a look at it. You recognize her?
No.
Oh, I can't believe she could have changed so much.
I don't understand you.
You're not telling me the truth.
I beg your pardon.
Look here, Inspector, I'm not going to have this. You'll apologize at once.
For doing my duty?
For being so offensive about it. I'm a public man.
Public men, Mr. Burling, have responsibilities as well as privileges.
Possibly, but you weren't asked to come here to talk to me about my responsibilities.
Let's hope not. So I'm beginning to wonder.
Does that mean anything, Sheila?
It means that we've no excuse now for putting on airs, and that if we've any sense, we won't try. Father threw this girl out because she asked for decent wages. I pushed her further out, right into the street, just because she was pretty. Gerald set her up as his mistress and then dropped her when it suited him, and now you're pretending you don't recognize her from that photograph. And if you're not telling the truth, why should the inspector apologize? Can't you see, Mother? You're making it worse.
Oh, the door again.
Gerald must have come back.
Unless your son has just gone out.
Oh, I'll see.
Mrs. Burling, you're a prominent member of the Brumley Women's Charity Organization. Hmm?
Go on, Mother. You might as well admit it. Yes, she is. Why?
It's an organization to which women in distress can appeal for help. Isn't that so?
We've done a great deal of useful work in helping deserving cases.
You were in the chair of the interviewing committee 2 weeks ago, were you not?
And if I was, what business is it of yours?
Mrs. Burling.
It must have been Eric we heard go out.
Eric? Where can he have gone to?
Can't imagine. But he was in one of his excitable, queer moods, and even though we don't need him here...
We do need him here. And if he's not back soon, I shall have to go and find him.
Why?
I'll explain that when you've answered my questions.
Is there any reason why my wife should answer questions from you, Inspector?
Yes, a very good reason. You remember that Mr. Croft told us that he hadn't spoken to or seen Eva Smith since last September. But Mrs. Burling spoke to and saw her only 2 weeks ago.
Mother!
Is this true?
Yes, quite true.
She appealed to your organization for help?
Yes.
Not as Eva Smith.
No, nor as Daisy Renton.
As what, then?
First, she called herself Mrs. Burling.
Mrs. Burling.
It was gross impertinence. Naturally, that was one of the things that prejudiced me against her case.
I should think so. Damned impudent.
You admit to being prejudiced against her case?
Yes.
And was it owing to your influence as the most prominent member of the committee that help was refused the girl?
Yes. I didn't like her manner. She'd impertinently made use of our name, though she pretended afterwards it just happened to be the first she thought of. She had to admit, after I began questioning her, that the story she told at first about a husband who deserted her was quite false.
Why does she want help?
You know very well why.
No, I don't. I know why she needed help. But as I wasn't there, I don't know what she asked from your committee.
I don't think we need to discuss it.
Mrs. Burley.
If you think you can bring any pressure to bear upon me, Inspector, you're quite mistaken. Unlike the other three, I did nothing I'm ashamed of or that won't bear investigation. The girl made a claim for assistance. I wasn't satisfied with it. She seemed to me to be not a good case, and so I used my influence to have it refused. And in spite of what's happened to the girl since, I consider I did my duty. So, if I prefer not to discuss it any further, you have no power to make me change my mind.
Yes, I have.
No, you haven't. Simply because I've done nothing wrong, and you know it.
I think you did something terribly wrong. And that you're going to spend the rest of your life regretting it. I wish you'd been with me tonight in the infirmary. You'd have seen
me. No, please. I've imagined it enough already.
Then the next time you imagine it, just remember that this girl was going to have a child.
Oh, horrible. How could she have wanted to kill herself?
Because she'd been turned out and turned down too many times.
Mother, you must have known.
It was because she was going to have a child that she went for assistance to your mother's committee.
Look here. This wasn't Gerald Croft.
Oh.
No. Nothing to do with him.
Thank goodness for that. Though I don't know why I should care now.
And you've nothing further to tell me, Mrs. Burling.
I'll tell you what I told her. Go and look for the father of the child. It's his responsibility.
That doesn't make it any the less yours. She came to you for help at a time when no woman could have needed it more. She was alone, friendless, almost penniless, desperate. She needed not only money, but advice, sympathy, friendliness. And you slammed the door in her face.
Mother, that was cruel and vile.
I must say, Sybil, that when this comes out at the inquest, it isn't going to do us much good.
Oh, stop it, both of you. And before you start accusing me of anything, please remember that it wasn't I who had her turned out of her employment, which probably began it all. In the circumstances, I think I was justified. The girl had begun by telling us a pack of lies. Afterwards, when I got at the truth, I discovered that she knew who the father was. So I told her it was her business to make him responsible. If he refused to marry her, and in my opinion he ought to be compelled to, then he must at least support her.
And what did she reply to that?
Oh, she was giving herself ridiculous airs, claiming elaborate fine feelings and scruples that were simply absurd in a girl in her position.
What did she say?
She said that the father was only a youngster, silly and wild and drinking too much. There couldn't be any question of marrying him. It would be wrong for them both. He had given her money, but she didn't want to take any more money from him.
Why didn't she want to take any more money from him?
Oh, some fancy reason. As if a girl of that sort would ever refuse money.
I warn you, you're making it worse for yourself. What reason did she give for not taking any more money?
Her story was that he'd said something one night when he was drunk that gave her the idea that it wasn't his money.
Where had he got it from, then?
He'd stolen it.
So she'd come to you for assistance because she didn't want to take stolen money.
That's the story she finally told, after I'd refused to believe her original story, that she was a married woman who'd been deserted by her husband. I didn't see any reason to believe that one story should be any truer than the other. Therefore, you're quite wrong to suppose I shall regret what I did.
But if her story was true, if this boy had been giving her stolen money, then she came to you for help because she wanted to keep this youngster out of any more trouble.
Possibly. But it sounded ridiculous. so I was perfectly justified in advising my committee not to allow her claim for assistance.
You're not even sorry now, when you know what happened to the girl.
I'm sorry she should have come to such a horrible end, but I accept no blame for it.
Who is to blame, then?
First, the girl herself.
For letting Father and me have her chucked out of her jobs.
Oh, no.
Secondly, I blame the young man who was the father of the child she was going to have. If, as she said, he didn't belong to her class and was some drunken young idler, then that's all the more reason why he shouldn't escape. He should be made an example of. If the girl's death is due to anybody, then it's due to him.
And if her story is true, that he was stealing money,
then he'd be entirely responsible, because the girl wouldn't have come to us and have been refused assistance if it hadn't been for him.
So he's the chief culprit, anyhow.
Certainly. And he ought to be dealt with very severely.
Mother, stop.
Be quiet, Sheila.
But don't you see
you're behaving like a hysterical child tonight, Sheila?
Oh.
Inspector, if you take some steps to find this young man and make sure that he's compelled to confess in public his responsibility, instead of staying here asking unnecessary questions, then you really would be doing your duty.
Don't worry, Mrs. Burling. I shall do my duty.
I'm glad to hear it.
No hushing up, eh? Make an example of the young man, eh? Public confession of responsibility.
Certainly. And now, no doubt, you'd like to say good night.
Not yet. I'm waiting.
Waiting for what?
To do my duty.
Now, Mother, don't you see?
But surely, I mean, that's ridiculous.
Inspector, you're not trying to tell us that my boy is mixed up in this?
If he is, then we know what to do, don't we? Mrs. Burling has just told us.
My God. Oh, look here.
I don't believe it. I won't believe it.
Mother, I begged you to stop, but would you?
You all know, don't you?
Yes, we know.
Eric, there must be some mistake. You don't know what we've been saying.
It's a good job for him he doesn't, isn't it?
Why?
Because Mother's been busy blaming everything on the young man who got this girl into trouble. And saying he shouldn't escape and should be made an example of.
Now, that's enough, Sheila.
You haven't made it any easier for me, have you, Mother?
But I didn't know it was you. I never dreamt. Besides, you're not that type. You don't get drunk.
Of course he does. I told you he did.
God, you little sneak.
That's not fair. I could have told her months ago, but I didn't. I only told her tonight because I knew it was bound to come out. So I thought she might as well know in advance. Don't forget, I've already been through it.
Sheila, I simply don't understand your attitude.
Neither do I. If you'd had any sense of loyalty...
There'll be plenty of time when I've gone for you all to adjust your family relationships. But now I must hear what your son has to tell me. When did you first meet this girl?
One night last November.
Where?
In the palace bar. I'd be there an hour or so with two or three chaps.
What happened then?
I began talking to her and stood her a few drinks. I was rather far gone by the time we had to go.
Was she drunk too?
She was a bit. Chiefly because she'd not had much to eat that day.
You went to her lodgings that night?
It seems I insisted. I'm not very clear about it, but afterwards she told me she didn't want me to go in, but that... Well, I was in that state when a chap easily turns nasty. And that's when it happened. And I don't even remember. That's the hellish thing. Oh, my God, how stupid it all is.
Eric, how could you?
Sheila, take your mother along to the drawing room.
I want to see...
You heard what I said. Go on, Sybil.
Come on, Mother.
When did you meet her again?
About a fortnight afterwards.
By appointment?
No. And I couldn't remember her name or where she lived. It was all very vague. But I happened to see her in the palace bar.
And you took her home again?
Yes. And this time we talked a bit. She told me something about herself, and I talked too. I told her my name and what I did.
And you made love again?
Yes. I wasn't in love with her or anything, but I liked her.
She was pretty and a good sport.
So you had to go to bed with her?
I'm old enough, aren't I?
Go on.
We saw each other a few more times, and then she told me she was going to have a baby.
And of course she was very worried about it.
Oh, yes, so was I. I was in a hell of a state about it.
Did she suggest that you ought to marry her?
She didn't want me to marry her. Said I didn't love her.
So what did you propose to do?
Well, she hadn't a job, and didn't feel like trying again for one, and she'd no money left. So I insisted on giving her enough money to keep her going, until she refused to take any more.
How much did you give her altogether?
I suppose about £50, all told.
£50? Where did you get £50 from? Well?
From the office.
My office?
Yes.
You stole it?
Not really.
What do you mean?
I'm sorry, Arthur.
It isn't my fault, but I simply have to know what's happening.
I'll tell you what's happening. He's admitted he was responsible for the girl's condition. And now he's telling us he supplied her with money he stole from my office.
I intended to pay it back.
We've heard that story before. How could you have paid it back?
I'd have managed somehow. I had to have some money.
You damn fool. Why didn't you come to me?
Because you're not the kind of father a chap could go to when he's in trouble.
Don't talk to me like that. Oh. Your trouble is you've been spoiled.
And my trouble is that I haven't much time. You'll be able to divide the responsibility between you when I've gone. Just one last question. That's all. The girl discovered that this money you were giving her was stolen, didn't she?
Yes. That was the worst of all. She wouldn't take any more, and she didn't want to see me again. But how did you know that? Did she tell you?
She told me nothing. I never spoke to her.
She told Mother.
Sheila, she told you. Did she come here? No, she couldn't have. She didn't know I lived here. What happened, Mother? Don't look like that. Tell me what happened.
After she'd done with you, she went to your mother's committee for help. Your mother refused that help.
Then you killed her. She came to you to protect me, and you turned her away. You killed her. And the child she'd have had, too. My child.
Eric, please.
You killed them both.
Please.
Damn you.
No, Eric, I don't understand.
You don't understand anything.
You hysterical young fool.
You never did. You never even tried. You...
Listen to me. This girl died a horrible death, but each of you helped to kill her. And don't ever forget that. But then I don't think you ever will. Remember, Mrs. Burling, you turned her away when she most needed help. You refused her even the pitiable little bit of organized charity you had in your power to grant her. Eric, remember what you did.
My God, I'm not likely to forget.
You used her for the end of a stupid, drunken evening. Oh. As if she was an animal. A thing, not a person. You, Miss Burling.
I had her turned out of a job. I started it.
You helped. And didn't start it. Mr. Burling. You started it. She wanted 25 shillings a week instead of 22 and sixpence. You made her pay a heavy price for that. And now she'll make you pay a heavier price still.
Inspector, I'd give thousands. Thousands.
You're offering the money at the wrong time. No. I don't think any of you will forget. Nor that young man Croft, though he at least had some affection for her and made her happy for a time. Well, Eva Smith's gone. You can't do her any more harm, and you can't do her any good either. You can't even say, I'm sorry, Eva Smith.
That's the worst of it.
Well, remember this. One Eva Smith has gone. But there are millions and millions of Eva Smiths and John Smiths still left with us. With their lives, their hopes and fears, their suffering and chance of happiness, all intertwined with our lives, with what we think and say and do. We don't live alone. We're members of one body, responsible for each other. And I tell you... that the time will soon come when, if men will not learn that lesson, then they will be taught it, in fire and blood and anguish. Good night.
You're the one I blame for this, Eric.
I'll bet I am.
You don't realize yet all you've done. There'll be a public scandal.
I don't care now.
You? You don't seem to care about anything. But I care. I was almost certain for a knighthood in the next honors list.
For God's sake! What does it matter now whether they give you a knighthood or not?
It doesn't matter to you. Apparently nothing matters to you. But it may interest you to know that until every penny of that money you stole is repaid, you'll work for nothing. And there's going to be no more of this drinking round the town and picking up women in the palace bar.
I should think not. Eric, I'm absolutely ashamed of you.
I don't blame you. But don't forget, I'm ashamed of you as well.
Now,
yes, both of you.
Drop that. There's every excuse for what your mother and I did. It turned out unfortunately, that's all.
That's all?
Oh, well, what have you got to say?
I don't know where to begin.
Then don't.
I know I behaved badly and I'm ashamed of it. But now you're beginning all over again to pretend that nothing much has happened.
Nothing much has happened? Haven't I said there'll be a public scandal? And who will suffer from that more than I will?
That's not what I'm talking about. You don't seem to have learnt anything.
You're wrong there. I've learnt plenty tonight. Oh, when I think of what I was feeling when the five of us sat down to dinner tonight.
Yes. And you remember what you said to Gerald and me after dinner, when you were feeling so pleased with yourself? You told us that a man has to make his own way, look after himself and mind his own business, and that we weren't to take any notice of these cranks who tell us that everybody has to look after everybody else. Do you remember? And then one of those cranks walked in, the inspector. I notice you didn't tell him that it's every man for himself.
Is that when the inspector came, just after Father had said that?
What of it?
It's strange. It doesn't much matter now, of course. But was he really a police inspector?
If he wasn't, it matters a devil of a lot. Makes all the difference.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, don't talk rubbish. Of course it does.
Well, it doesn't to me, and it oughtn't to you either.
Don't be childish.
It's you two who are being childish, trying not to face the facts.
I won't have that sort of talk. Any more of that and you leave this room.
That'll be terrible for her, won't it?
Don't you see? If all that's come out tonight is true, then it doesn't much matter who it was who made us confess. And it was true, wasn't it? Father turned the girl out of one job, and I had her turned out of another. Gerald kept her, at a time when he was supposed to be too busy to see me. Eric, well, we know what Eric did. And Mother hardened her heart and gave her the final push that finished her.
Oh.
That's what's important, not whether a man is a police inspector or not.
He was our police inspector, all right.
That's what I mean. But I have an idea, and I had it all along vaguely, that there was something curious about him. He never seemed like an ordinary police inspector.
You're right. Yeah, I felt it too.
Well, I must say his manner was extraordinary. So rude and assertive.
Look at the way he talked to me, telling me to shut up. He must have known I was an ex-Lord Mayor and a magistrate and so forth. Besides, the way he talked, I mean, they don't talk like that. I've had dealings with dozens of them.
But it doesn't make any real difference.
Oh, of course it does.
No, Sheila's right. It doesn't.
That's comic coming from you. You're the one it makes most difference to. You've confessed to theft. And now he knows all about it. And he can bring it out at the inquest. And, if necessary, carry it to court. He can't do anything to your mother and Sheila and me. Except perhaps make us look a bit ashamed of ourselves in public. But as for you, he can ruin you.
We hardly ever told him anything he didn't know. Did you notice that?
Oh, that's nothing. He had a bit of information left by the girl and made a few smart guesses. But the fact remains that if we hadn't talked so much, he'd have had little to go on. Yeah, and why you all had to go letting everything come out like that beats me.
It's all right talking like that now, but he made us confess.
He certainly didn't make me confess, as you call it. I told him quite plainly that I thought I had done no more than my duty.
Oh, Mother!
The fact is, you allowed yourselves to be bluffed. That fellow was prejudiced from the start, probably some sort of crank. And you let him bluff you into talking about your private affairs. You ought to have stood up to him.
I didn't notice you standing up to him.
No, because by that time, you'd admitted you'd been taking money. What chance had I after that? I was a fool not to have insisted upon seeing him alone.
Oh, that wouldn't have worked.
Of course it wouldn't.
Really, from the way you children talk, you might be wanting to help him instead of us. Now, just be quiet, so that your father can decide what we ought to do.
Yes. We'll have to get to work quickly. How's this? I'd better go.
Edmund will go. I asked her to wait up to make us some tea.
It might be Gerald coming back.
Oh, Gerald? Of course. Yeah, I'd forgotten about him.
Mr. Croft.
I hope you don't mind my coming back.
Of course not, Gerald. All right, Edna. Close the door.
Yes, ma'am.
When did that inspector go?
Only a few minutes ago. He put us all through it.
Now, we needn't bother Gerald with all that stuff.
He might as well know. We're all in it, Gerald, up to the neck. It got worse after you left.
How did he behave?
In a very peculiar and suspicious manner.
He was frightening.
The way he spoke to Mr. Burling and me was quite extraordinary.
If you ask me, he wasn't a police inspector.
You're right.
What?
That man was not a police inspector.
Are you certain?
Almost certain. I met a police sergeant I know down the road. I asked him about this Inspector Ghoul and described the chap carefully to him. He swore there wasn't any Inspector Ghoul or anybody like him on the force here.
But you didn't tell him...
No. I said I'd been having an argument with someone. But the point is, this sergeant was dead certain they hadn't any inspector at all like the chap who came here.
A fake.
Didn't I tell you? Didn't I say I couldn't imagine a real police inspector talking to us like that?
We've been had.
I'm going to make certain of this.
What are you doing?
Ringing up the Chief Constable, Colonel Roberts. Brumley 8752.
Careful what you say, dear.
Of course. Colonel Roberts, please. Mr. Arthur Burling here. You know, Gerald, I had my suspicions all along. Oh, Roberts, Burling here. Sorry to ring you up so late, but can you tell me if an Inspector Ghoul has joined your staff lately? Ghoul. G-O-O-L-E. A new man. About 5 feet 10 inches, dark hair, clean shaven. I see. Yes. Well, no, that settles it. No, just a little argument we were having here. Good night, Colonel.
Well, dear?
What did he say?
There's no Inspector Ghoul on the force here. As you say, Gerald, we've been had.
I felt it all the time.
This makes a difference, you know. In fact, it makes all the difference.
Of course.
I suppose we're all nice people now.
Sheila, if you've nothing more sensible to say than that, you'd better keep quiet. Oh,
she's right, though.
And you'd better keep quiet anyhow. If that had been a police inspector, and in turn you confess...
Arthur, careful.
Yes.
You see, Gerald, you haven't to know the rest of our crimes and idiocies.
That's all right. I don't want to. Well, sir, what do you make of this business now? Was it a hoax?
Of course. Somebody put that fellow up to coming here and hoaxing us. There are people in this town who dislike me enough to do that. Ah. We ought to have seen through it from the first. In the ordinary way, I believe I would have done. But coming like that, by on top of our little celebration, just when we were all feeling so pleased with ourselves, well, actually, it took me by surprise.
I wish I'd been here when that man first arrived. I'd have asked him a few questions before I allowed him to ask us any.
It's all right saying that now.
I was the only one of you who didn't give in to him. Oh. And now I say we must discuss this business quietly and sensibly, and decide if there's anything to be done about it.
You're absolutely right, my dear.
Already we've discovered one important fact. That fellow was a fraud. But we found him out. And all we have to do is keep our heads. Eh? Now it's our turn.
Our turn? To do what?
To behave sensibly.
What's the use of talking about behaving sensibly? You're beginning to pretend now that nothing's really happened at all. But this girl's still dead, isn't she?
And that's what they don't seem to understand.
Whoever that chap was, the fact remains that I did what I did. And Mother did what she did. And the rest of you did what you did to her. It's still the same rotten story, whether it's been told to a police inspector or to somebody else. According to you, I ought to feel a lot better. Oh, Gerald, you might as well know I stole some money.
Eric!
But the money's not the important thing. It's what happened to the girl. And what we all did to her that matters.
Eric's right. And it's the best thing any one of us has said tonight. And it makes me feel a bit less ashamed of us. You're just beginning to pretend all over again.
For God's sake.
Arthur.
Well, they're so damned exasperating. They just won't try to understand our position or to see the difference between a lot of stuff like this coming out in private and a downright public scandal.
And I say the girl's dead and we all helped to kill her, and that's what matters.
Eric, either stop shouting or get out. Some fathers I know would have kicked you out of the house anyhow by this time. So hold your tongue if you want to stay here.
I don't give a damn now whether I stay or not.
You'll stay long enough to pay back that money you stole.
But that won't bring Eva Smith back to life, will it?
And it doesn't alter the fact that we all helped to kill her.
But is it a fact?
I suppose you're going to prove now you didn't spend last summer keeping this girl instead of seeing me, eh?
I did keep a girl last summer. I've admitted it. And I'm sorry, Sheila.
Well, I must admit you came out of this better than the rest of us. The inspector said that.
He wasn't an inspector.
He inspected us all right. And don't let's start dodging and pretending now. Between us, we drove that girl to commit suicide.
Who says so? There's no more real evidence we did than there was that that chap was a police inspector.
Of course there is.
No, look at it. A man comes here pretending to be a police officer. It's a hoax of some kind. Now, what does he do? Very artfully, working on bits of information he's picked up here and there, he bluffs us into confessing that we've all been mixed up in this girl's life in one way or another.
And so we have.
But how do you know it's the same girl?
We all admitted it.
You all admitted something to do with a girl. But how do you know it's the same girl? Mr. Burling, you sack a girl called Eva Smith. You've forgotten, but he shows you a photograph of her, and then you remember, right?
Well, that part's straightforward enough. But what then?
Well, he happens to know that Sheila once had a girl sacked from Millwood's shop. He tells us that it's this same Eva Smith, and he shows her a photograph that she recognises.
Yes.
But how do you know it's the same photograph? Did you see the one your father looked at?
No.
And did your father see the one he showed you?
No. I see what you mean.
We've no proof it was the same photograph, and therefore no proof it was the same girl. Now, take me. I never saw a photograph. He caught me out by suddenly announcing that this girl changed her name to Daisy Renton. I gave myself away at once because I'd known a Daisy Renton.
And there wasn't the slightest proof that this Daisy Renton was really Eva Smith. We've only his word for it. And we'd only his word for it that he was a police inspector. And we now know he was lying. So he could have been lying all the time.
Exactly. Now, what happened after I left?
I was upset because Eric had left the house, and this man said that if Eric didn't come back, he'd have to go and find him. Well, that made me feel worse still. And his manner was so severe, and he seemed so confident. Then quite suddenly he said I'd seen Eva Smith only 2 weeks ago.
Those were his exact words.
And like a fool I said I had.
I don't see now why you did that. She didn't call herself Eva Smith when she came to see you at the committee, did she?
Of course she didn't. But when he suddenly turned on me with those questions, I answered more or less as he wanted me to.
But, Mother, he showed you a photograph of the girl before that, and you obviously recognised it.
Did anybody else see it?
No. He showed it only to me.
Then there's still no proof it was the same girl. He might have showed you the photograph of any girl who applied to the committee.
And how do we know that she was Eva Smith or Daisy Renton?
Gerald's right. He could have used a different photograph each time, and we'd be none the wiser. We may all have been recognizing different girls.
Eric, did he ask you to identify a photograph?
He didn't need a photograph by the time he got round to me. But obviously it must have been the girl I knew who went to see Mother.
Why must it?
She said she had to have help because she wouldn't take any more stolen money. And the girl I knew had told me that already.
But even then, that may have been all nonsense.
I don't see much nonsense about it when a girl goes and kills herself. You lot may be letting yourselves out nicely, but I can't. Nor can Mother. We did her in all right.
Now, wait a minute. Don't be in such a hurry to put yourself into court. That interview with your mother could have been just as much a put-up job. Like all this police inspector business, the whole damn thing can have been a piece of bluff.
How can it? The girl's dead, isn't she?
What girl? There were probably four or five different girls.
Oh, that doesn't matter to me. The one I knew is dead.
Is she? How do we know she is?
That's right. How do we know any girl killed herself today?
Now, here, answer that one. Let's look at it from this fellow's point of view. We're having a little celebration here and feeling rather pleased with ourselves. Now, he has to work a trick on us. Well, the first thing he does is to give us such a shock that after that, he can bluff us all the time. And he starts right off. A girl in the infirmary has just died in agony.
All right, don't pile it on.
You see, just repeating it shakes you a bit. And that's what he had to do. Shake us at once, and then start questioning us until we didn't know where we were. Oh, oh, he had the laugh of us, all right.
He could laugh his head off if I knew it really was all a hoax.
I'm convinced it is. No police inquiry. No one girl that all this happens to. No scandal.
And no suicide?
We can settle that at once.
How?
By ringing up the infirmary.
Either there's a dead girl there, or there isn't. Hello? The infirmary, please.
It will look a bit odd, won't it? Ringing up at this time of night.
Is that the infirmary? Yeah, this is Mr. Gerald Croft of Crofts Limited. Yes. We're rather worried about one of our employees. Have you had a girl brought in this afternoon who committed suicide by drinking disinfectant? Or any other suicide? Yes, I'll wait. Yes? You're certain of that? I see. Well, thank you very much. Good night.
Well?
No girl has died in there today, and they haven't had a suicide for months.
There you are. The whole story's just a lot of moonshine. Gerald, have a drink.
Thanks. I think I could do with one now.
Yeah, so could I.
I must say, Gerald, you've argued this very cleverly.
Well, you see, while I was out of the house, I'd had time to cool off and think things out a little.
Yes, he didn't keep you on the run as he did the rest of us. I'll admit now, he gave me a bit of a scare at the time. But I'd had a very special reason for not wanting any public scandal just now. Here you go, Gerald.
Thank you, sir.
Well, here's to us.
Father, you're forgetting one thing I still can't forget. Everything we said had happened, really had happened. If it didn't end tragically, then that's lucky for us. But it might have done.
But the whole thing's different now. You can see that, can't you?
No.
You all helped to kill her. Oh, I wish you could have seen the look on your faces when he said that. Oh, come on, Sheila. You'll have a good laugh over it yet. Look, you'd better ask Gerald for that ring again. Then you'll feel better.
You're pretending everything's just as it was before.
I'm not.
We've been had, that's all.
So nothing really happened? So there's nothing to be sorry for? Nothing to learn? We can all go on behaving just as we did.
Well, why shouldn't we?
I'll tell you. Whoever that inspector was, it was anything but a joke. You knew it then. You began to learn something. Now you've stopped. You're ready to go on in the same old way.
And you're not, eh?
No, because I remember what he said. How he looked. And what he made me feel. Fire, blood, and anguish. And it frightens me the way you talk. I can't listen to any more of it.
I agree with Sheila. Oh. It frightens me, too.
Well, go to bed, then.
We're overtired, dear. In the morning, we'll be as amused as we are.
Sheila, everything's all right now. So, what about this ring?
No. Gerald, not yet. It's too soon. I must think.
Oh, now, look at the pair of them. The famous younger generation who know it all. They can't even take a joke.
Yeah? Yeah, Mr. Burling speaking. What? Hello? Hello?
Father?
Mr. Burling?
Arthur? Who was that?
The police. A girl has just died on her way to the infirmary. After swallowing some disinfectant. And the police inspector is on his way here to ask some questions.
In An Inspector Calls by J.B. Priestley, Inspector Gould was played by Bob Peck. Arthur Burling, John Woodvine. Sybil Burling, Maggie Steele. And Sheila Burling, Sarah Jane Holm. Eric Burling was David Andrews. Gerald Croft, Joe Stone Hewings. And Edna, Alison Pettit. The music was composed and performed by Simon Russell. Technical presentation was by Martha Littlehales, and the production assistant was Joanne Hopper. An Inspector Calls was adapted for radio by John Foley and was directed for the BBC World Service by Rosalind Ward.